ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I was going to ask you, do you have like a guilty pleasure?
Yeah, but I'm not going to tell you what it is or watch that rash at all. Look, yeah, of course I'm a guilty pleasure. And my guilty pleasures are usually associated with sweet stuff, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Tiramisu. I'm on the search for the perfect tiramisu or a tiramisu that's the better than the one that I make.
So basically sugar. You're a sugar seeker.
Yeah, but my tiramisu, you don't want to drive after you have it.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah. Well, let's talk about that recipe later. But I do like the idea of people sort of always like confess that they're into sugar when actually it's like one of the most fundamental things to our biology. It's like seek energy, seek sugar.
And that's what we're going to be talking about on today's What's That Rash?
It is indeed. Well, the opposite of that. Artificial sweeteners. I'm health reporter Tegan Taylor on Jagger and Turrbal Land.
And I'm physician and journalist Dr. Norman Swan speaking to you from Gadigal Land.
So yes, Norman, we've been getting a couple of questions. Actually, everyone seems to be asking about artificial sweeteners. Chris is asking that he's heard that they're not great for our health, but he's wondering about natural sweeteners like stevia. And we also got a question today from Sharon about whether substituting sugar for sweeteners in her tea and coffee might be good. Also, Sharon says that our banter is very amusing.
Oh, so Sharon, well, maybe we'll answer your question before Chris's.
I guess the good place to start here would be like, why are we so obsessed with sweetness?
Well, the sweet taste and a taste for sweetness is just fundamental in our biology. We've got receptors for sweetness on our tongue. Children have a strong preference from sweetness over bitterness. You've actually got to train kids to acquire a taste for bitterness, such as in vegetables and so on. And one assumes that it had survival value, that we looked for calories and preferred foods with calories to get us through the lean times. Also, that it may well be that sweet things are less likely to be toxic and contain poisons. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons, but we've certainly evolved for a strong taste of sweetness.
It is interesting that it doesn't feel like it could possibly ever have been the case because it's so ubiquitous now. It's hard to find any food that doesn't have like whacks of sugar in it. But in nature, sweetness is pretty rare. And so if you found honey or really ripe fruit, you're like, get this into you now, capitalize on this opportunity.
Yeah, and it's just so pleasant. Just
well, it is.
Rings every neurological bell.
Well, that just sounds like something a human would say.
Exactly.
I was going to say about the preference for sweet in young kids, and we sort of grow out of it a little bit. And I actually was really interested to know why we would grow out of it if it is such a strong evolutionary driver. Like, why would we lose that taste for intense sweetness as we get older?
I don't think we lose it. It's just balanced against other sensations, other taste sensations. But some people don't lose it to a huge extent, and they really do consume a lot of sweet stuff. And I've just come back from a couple of days in the United States, and it's extraordinary when you've got a taste for Australian food. And people living in America, you might not notice it, but if you go to America, a lot of foods are sweet, which are not sweet here.
I know that you're a true Australian, Norman, because there's nothing Australians love more than to talk about how much better our food is here than it is in America. So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much indeed. And you know, and as you know, Scots don't put sugar in their porridge, they put salt. Not sure which is worse.
So I suppose what you get when you have a species, humans, that are obsessed with sugar and we have turned into an industrial society, we make a lot of foods with sugar in it. And so the reason why we have artificial sweeteners is because we're so obsessed with sugar that we're trying to like replace it for ourselves without all the calories that come along with sugar.
Yeah. Now, if you're looking in an evolutionary sense, just to square off that, you know, as you said, we got it from honey, we got it from fruit and other foods. So in other words, we got it in whole foods, not added sugar. What's developed over the centuries is the production of sucrose, sugar from sugarcane, from beet and so on, where you could actually artificially sweeten foods without the use of fruit and so on. And that's been the addiction that we've had for centuries, and it's got a lot worse. And of course, sugar, table sugar, is half fructose. And fructose, that part of sugar, is incredibly toxic and behaves like a fat in our bloodstream.
I know that it's bad at like a societal level and that a lot of people have ill health effects about it, but I also really can't be mad about it because it does make food taste really good.
That's right. And like a lot of these things, it's a matter of degree. But it's also created a sense that, well, if we don't need to take sugar, can we use other sweeteners which are potentially less toxic and less bad for us?
Well, let's talk about the artificial sweeteners. And I was really interested to discover how old artificial sweetening is. So the first sort of artificial sweetener is saccharin.
You mean non-sugar sweeteners?
Right, so non-sugar sweeteners. So saccharin was first synthesized in the 1800s, 1879, which was really interesting until they thought that maybe it caused cancer. But then from about the 50s and 60s, it really exploded, which really isn't that much of a surprise because that's when our ultra-processed food industry really kicked off as well. And so it makes sense that that's the time when we're also discovering that we can manufacture compounds that at least in our mouths feel a lot like sugar.
And you find these artificial sweeteners in a lot of different foods. So it's not just carbonated beverages. It's on the table where you add it to your coffee or your tea. It's in yogurt, it's in cakes, it's in all sorts of foods that you might eat. So you can consume quite a lot of these artificial sweeteners on any given day of the week and different kinds. Although aspartame has become probably the commonest artificial sweetener around.
Let's do a bit of a breakdown of the ones that we're talking about. There's artificial, like truly synthesized sweeteners, and then there's also plant-based sweeteners, and they sort of all have a similar thing in common, which is that they're substances that taste very intensely sweet to us humans, so you only need a little bit of them to provide a similar level of sweetness to sugar.
Correct. And one of the challenges for the food industry is to develop artificial sweeteners which taste like sucrose. And that's been the challenge because a lot don't. And even the ones that are pretty good don't. But nonetheless, they're sufficiently sweet that they can get away with it. And stevia is the so-called natural one, the plant-based one, as opposed to the synthetic artificial sweeteners.
Do we need a little bit of a chemistry lesson here?
We probably do. Am I the person to give it to you? Probably not. but really what they're doing is they're interacting with receptors on our tongue. Stevia, you know, in terms of sweet for sweet, it's like several hundred times more sweet than table sugar. So it's an incredibly sweet substance. But they're a bit off target in terms of our taste receptors, which is why they don't necessarily always taste just like sugar. But that's what they interact with.
So the reason why we're turning to sweeteners like this is because we want sweet foods. We don't want to have to pay the calorie-dense price of sucrose in our food. So why is there a question around health effects if they're not providing the calories that sugar do?
Because there's more to this. You're adding a synthetic substance to our diet. I mean, stevia, okay, is natural, but you're adding something synthetic to our diet, potentially in large quantities. And if you're going to do that, you want to know that it's safe. And the food regulators want to know it's safe. Are you adding stuff to food? We know what sugar does. Do we know what these artificial sweeteners do? And so there's been a lot of studies to actually find that out.
Well, the WHO, the World Health Organization, put out a review last year on the health effects of non-sugar sweeteners. It made a really big splash at the time. We actually discussed it on the Health Report, which you can listen to wherever you get your podcasts. Distill us down, Norman, what the kind of main take-home message was from this WHO report.
I need to get technical here in terms of how it's been studied. So one way that artificial sweeteners have been studied is to take large groups of people who are followed for many years, and their diet is analysed, and we know what they've been eating by and large. There's some inaccuracies in that, and these are called cohort studies. When you look at cohort studies, the news is not particularly good. Changing from sugar to artificial sweeteners, or having a dominantly artificial sweeteners in your diet rather than sugar, does not seem to affect your weight. It looks as though that it increases the risk of type 2 diabetes, coronary heart disease, and premature death over an extended period of time. Not by a huge amount, but by a bit.
Can I jump in here and ask a question? Because I had a question about this that maybe you can explain to me. Is that looks like there's links between using artificial sweeteners and things like diabetes, coronary heart disease, perhaps higher BMI, when it seems to me that the types of people who are probably most drawn to using diet products are people who perhaps are already maybe at a higher BMI. They're trying to lose weight. And so could it be that those things are linked to the non-nutritive sweeteners because people are already in that category, or is it that they're driving that link, driving that increase in risk?
You go to the top of the epidemiology class immediately, because what you're talking about is reverse causality. And it's one of the things that damn cohort studies. I mean, I'll now repeat what you said, but essentially, because it's so good, I can plagiarise you. But essentially, yes, is it the case that people who are more likely to be obese, more likely to have an unhealthy lifestyle, are they more likely to actually consume artificial sweeteners? And it's their risk factors that determine their poor outcomes in the end. And artificial sweeteners are just something they're trying to use to help them along, but it's not, and they've got a high risk anyway. Now, these cohort studies have tried very hard to remove reverse causality from their data. You can do that statistically, but you can never do it that perfectly. And they say these negative effects, which are not large, by the way, but they're there, are maintained even when you remove statistically reverse causality, which is what you're talking about there. So here's the other contrast. When you look at randomized controlled trials, they don't show those effects. They actually show in the short term, and most of these studies are short term and they're not necessarily high quality, in the short term, switching to artificial sweeteners actually causes you to lose a bit of weight. Not much, just a little bit of weight. But in fact, is possibly not sustained because the studies have only been short term. And where the balance lies, you ask me, well, where does it land? If you are trying to lose weight, artificial sweeteners are a handy add-on, because if you like sweet drinks and you switch to artificial sweeteners, there's a clear benefit of artificial sweeteners, at least in the short term. However, in the long term, those benefits seem to disappear, and if anything, a little bit of risk actually emerges. There probably is a very, very small increased risk of cancer, and the studies are all over the place. So, for example, in men, they've suggested that there's an increased risk, a small increased risk of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and multiple myeloma, but you know, these are not seen in other studies. And if you take all the studies on cancer together, you're maybe increasing the risk of cancer in these cohort groups by about 0.2%, something like that. So if, let's say you're in your 40s, if you've got 1,000 people in your 40s, maybe 40, 45 people will develop cancer.
Just at baseline.
As a baseline. And then if you increase that by 0.2%, that maybe two or three more people will develop cancer out of 1,000 people in their 40s. So it's not huge. And the World Health Organization really has racked back its assessment of cancer risk, and they think it's pretty small.
So they've put it in group 2B, possibly carcinogenic to humans, which doesn't sound good when you look at it. But for context, that is the same category as aloe vera and ginkgo biloba. And the groups above that include things like red meat, and definitely carcinogenic includes alcohol. So in terms of things that we're putting in our body,
it's a long way behind.
Yeah.
And the other thing with the World Health Organization recommendations, the daily intake recommendation is huge.
Oh, yeah.
And there'll be very few people, you know, to achieve that increased risk of cancer. It's a vast intake compared to what most people would actually be consuming.
Well, I think the safe dose tops out at around 5 litres of artificially sweetened soft drink a day, which I physically couldn't fit in, I don't think.
Right. Yeah, and if you're listening to Watch That Rash, you're probably not drinking that much.
I know that the answer to the question of, like, what should I be drinking is water, but if I am feeling like something fizzy, am I killing myself faster if I have the one with the sugar in it or if I have the one with the not sugar sweeteners in it?
Rather than taking sucrose, in other words, added highly refined sugar in your diet, trading that for artificial sweeteners, it's probably going to be better for you in the short term. But if you're taking vast volumes of stuff for years, it's not necessarily going to be good for you at all. It's really about volume.
And what about not artificial but still things that aren't sugar sweeteners, other non-sugar sweeteners?
Like stevia. Yeah. Mm. There really hasn't been that much research into stevia. So we know it's a pretty good sweetener. Whether or not it's better for you than the synthetic ones, we just simply don't know that. It's not been well studied.
All right. So avoid your sugar, but probably also avoid the artificial and other non-sugar sweeteners. We really are just drinking water, aren't we?
Yeah, and sucrose should just be a treat, like when I invite you over for my tiramisu.
Just while I'm waiting for the invite, what's the recipe? Come on.
Look, it's probably not that much different from anybody else's recipe, except that I'm not shy with sugar and I'm not shy with the really good coffee to soak the Savoyard biscuits when you put them in. And I also use alcohol, usually Kahlua, maybe Kahlua and some brandy. And I warn guests not to drive after they have it. And it sits for 24 hours in the fridge.
It sounds like a real health food.
It's fantastic. You're just ready to go out and take on the world after you've had it.
Well, if you want to email Norman to ask him for the full recipe for his tiramisu or to ask us a question, you can email us. We are thatrash@abc.net.au.
Now, we've got to tell you about this fantastic email, because you might remember our last What's That Rash was about plucks and pimples and acne. And you put out a call.
I did. So you were calling them plucks, which I hadn't heard of. And that's the Scottish word for pimples. And I issued a throwdown to the world saying if you had a grosser word for zits to let us know. And Maxim from Russia has emailed us.
Yeah, Maxim's a doctor and he listens to the health report and Watch That Rash to brush up on his medical English. I hope he's not using it for his to
his
save
exams.
Lives in Russia. But anyway, it's Maxim, sort of this long and very amusing email. And apparently, if you really want to insult somebody, you call them a pimple in Russian. So he gave us the Russian of it, and we've had to research the pronunciation. So now Tegan is going to tell you. So instead of swearing foully, you can call somebody this, and as long as they're not Russian, they won't have a clue what you're calling them. And it is?
My attempt at pronouncing it is preach.
I think that's pretty good.
Give us yours.
Preach.
Okay.
You preach, get away from me. And it's the Russian for pimple.
So thank you so much, Maxim. And thank you to everyone who sends in emails to us, thatrash@abc.net.au, where you can send us your love letters, your feedback, good feedback only, please. And of course, your questions that we will answer on the show. And if you would like to see us in person and you are in Brisbane on Friday night this week, you can if you come to our live show.
It's at the World Science Festival in Brisbane. It's part of the Social Science Night at the World Science Festival. And you can search World Science Festival Social Science to buy your tickets.
Buy your tickets, come along, maybe even ask your disgusting question to us in person. And if you can't, we love you anyway.
And we've already had some disgusting questions and they've won tickets for it.
Yep, indeed.
So for some of you, we'll see you on Friday. For most of you, we'll see you next week.
See you then.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.